Well, hello, friends. It has been a while. Today is April 29th, 2013, and I think I let off recording sometime in September with Esoteric Astrology Adventure. With Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 91, Section B. That's where I let off. I'm trying to double record this after quite a bit of technical difficulty. I wish I had a sound studio here which could provide the proper ambience and the backup for all things needed. However, what we do have here is a continuation of the Leo chapter. And I will do my best to get back into the swing of the very important material Master DK has given to us. Hopefully, even though this is somewhat a commentary method, you will find that it is possible to gain some information and some insights from what is here said. Hopefully this will be possible. So, let's see, where did we end up here? It was the statement that it is through the permanent atoms that the forces of materialism can work. The Great White Lodge works through the seven centers. We have to remember that the seven centers are, in a way, an expression of the Fohatic aspect of the monad, will, wisdom, and activity, the gyrating whirlwind effect of the third aspect of the monad. That's what creates the centers, and when we deal with the permanent atoms, we are dealing with the substance aspect particularly, which is under the rule of the Deva kingdom. And these it is that creates the vehicles through which this whirlwind effect can demonstrate, as the seven chakras eventually in each one of the vehicles. Aries begins the process and is the initiator of the process which leads to progress or progress. And at the end of the age, whichever age this may be, as he seems to be veiling here through a type of non-specificity, at the end of the age, as it is now at the final or seventh initiation, the initiator of the mysteries will work under instructions and with energies which emanate from the Lord of the constellation Aries. Notice here that there are lords of constellations. Some people have thought they are simply configurations of stars seen from a certain perspective by us and thus taking on their shapes because of our perspective, but having no further or deeper meaning. But this is not the case. There are great deities who inform a number of solar systems, and these deities work through all of them, considering the solar systems as chakras, both major chakras, minor chakras, and perhaps even minute chakras, if the analogy holds good. This is interesting. The seventh initiation even now seems to be administered under the impulse of Aries. It does begin an entirely new point of development for the initiate, and he has completed his work with respect to the seven subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. I think I should have that available, if I can make it available. Right here is what we need, the AAB diagrams, and here we have the seven subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, and the seventh initiation seems to be taken with respect to the logoic plane. Now, we could question whether the eighth and ninth initiations are still found upon the logoic plane. Perhaps they have something to do with the cosmic astral plane, but at a certain point at the ninth initiation, the initiate refuses all contact with the cosmic physical plane. And that is a great release and refusal to be involved in that which is, from that lofty point of view, considered to be inhibiting. So maybe even at the seventh initiation, Aries may be involved. Aries involved, perhaps, here? It is certainly possible. Now, continuing, I just had to make sure that I have the proper autocorrect operating. So, at this new beginning at which the planetary logos presides as the initiator, Sanat Kumara presiding at initiations 5, 4, and 3, and a kind of emanation of the planetary logos, an unnamed existence at initiation 6, and the planetary logos himself at initiation 7, I think we also have some kind of participation of the solar logos. The sun is, after all, exalted in Aries. And so I think there is a connection there with the seventh initiation. So this is the beginning of true progress. It is an initiation of transfiguration with respect to the solar logos. And we are told that at the end of the age, even as it is now, that the lord of the constellation Aries will operate as the initiator instead of the energies of Capricorn. Now, whether that will be for, it seems, will be for initiations lower than the seventh. For now, it is at the seventh initiation that this occurs. So the sun is exalted in Aries. We're dealing with a kind of a transfiguration initiation there in the Sirian system. The fifth initiation is the first of the real Sirian initiations, and that's sort of the birth in relation to Sirius. The sixth initiation of choice is the purification in relation to Sirius, and the seventh initiation is the transfiguration in relation to Sirius. And at that transfiguration, at all transfigurations, an entirely new type of regime begins with respect to our solar system and not Sirius. The fifth initiation is the initiation of transfiguration, because the third is the first solar initiation, the fourth the second solar initiation, and then the fifth would be the third solar initiation, or transfiguration in relation to our solar logos. Whenever there's a transfiguration, there is a change of state and an elevation into an altogether higher type of condition. Let's just say that the possibility of being free from the 18 lower levels of the cosmic physical plane occurs at the planetary transfiguration, and the possibility of being free from the four lower cosmic physical subplanes occurs at the solar transfiguration initiation, and the possibility of being free from the six cosmic physical subplanes of monadic development comes at the seventh initiation. So the seventh initiation focuses on plane number seven, the logoic plane. The fifth initiation focuses on the atmic plane, the fifth cosmic physical plane, counting from below. And the third initiation focuses on the higher mental plane, which leaves behind, in a sense, the lower 18 subplanes, which are the dense physical body of our planetary logos. So anyway, the initiation has to do with being an initiator, and one is the initiator of one's own progress. But of course, the initiator, the initiate, is initiate before he's initiated, or the initiation is the confirmation of that which the initiate has initiated for himself. And then the seal of progress is set upon the work which the candidate has done in initiating a new state of entry into a still higher level of being. In the last analysis, and esoterically speaking, fire is the great liberator, and Aries is the leading fire sign. It does have to do with cosmic fire, just as Leo has to do with solar fire, and Sagittarius with fire by friction, or more planetary fire, should we say. So in the last analysis, and esoterically speaking, a fire is the great liberator, and Aries is the leading fire sign, which will eventually fuse the beginning and the end, blend the opposites, and dispel both time and space. There is an interesting sense in which time and space are ruled by Saturn. Saturn falls in Aries, whereas Uranus, which rules the transcendence of time and space, is a very high ruler in the sign Aries. Sometimes we say that Saturn rules time, Jupiter rules space. Sometimes Uranus is connected with great space. But in general, the time-space illusions, space being a kind of perceived containment, are very much under the control of Saturn, and time certainly is. So these fall away in Aries, and the possibility of appreciating simultaneity occurs under Uranus, and expansive space in which one ring pass knot after another is broken. This is under the rulership of Uranus, the breaker of boundaries. At present, the initiator, let's see if I know where I am here. Okay. At present, the initiator of the mysteries acts under inspiration and with energies emanating from Capricorn, an earth sign, because humanity is as yet earthbound. What does it mean to be earthbound? I suppose we could say bound to the lower 18 subplanes. In a matter of fact, there's a way of thinking of that as rather bound in a lunar sense, because the 18th subplane is ruled by the moon, and then once we get to subplane number 19, corresponding with the 19th card of the tarot, we enter the realm of the sun. We enter the solar realm, where the first solar initiation can be taken. So we do not yet have our wings. We are as yet as if we were elementals and wingless in that sense. And once we take the fourth initiation, interestingly, the number four, so connected with Earth and yet with freedom from Earth, the number four connected with the M of matter and therefore of Earth and therefore of Mother, the number four liberates us onto planes higher than the 18 and the beginning into the Buddhic realm, which is the fourth realm. So we have to look at the true home of the fourth creative hierarchy, which is the hierarchy of human monads. That is the Buddhic plane. At least it's the home for their expression, for their major function and expression within our planet. So we are liberated from the dense levels of the planetary logos, which we could, in a way, consider to be Earth. And we are liberated onto the cosmic ethers, which we could consider to be air. And the three higher subplanes of the mental plane are kind of transitional between Earth and air, just the way gas, the gaseous realm, is transitional between that which is of the densest nature, namely water and dense substance, and the ethers. The forces of initiation produce their major effects upon the physical plane, for it is there that the initiate has to demonstrate his liberation, his understanding, and his divinity. Well, you know, what type of physical plane? Of course, we can talk about our own dense physical plane consisting systemically of the gaseous level, the liquid level, and the very dense mineral level. But from another perspective, we have gas, liquid, and minerality demonstrated cosmically as the lower 18 subplanes. The four lowest mental planes corresponding to the gaseous nature, and the astral plane corresponding to the liquid, and the cosmically, the entire etheric physical systemic plane corresponding to dense minerality. So anyway, there are changes coming about in the process of initiation, and Aries is the sign that is going to bring this to us at the end of the age. Now, at the end of the age, will we all have taken the seventh initiation? Those who have remained, will that be in relation to the seventh round of our particular fourth chain, or will it be in relation to the seventh scheme round, and therefore in relation to the seventh chain? This has yet to be established. In each one of the chains, there comes an opportunity for a particular initiation to be taken. But some have gone on in advance, like the Christ and the Masters and the Chohans, and have, shall we say, almost prematurely taken these initiations. We could say that the fifth round of our particular chain is meant for the fifth initiation. I think that's true to a degree, and maybe even more so the fifth chain. We could say that the sixth round is meant for our sixth initiation. That's the sixth round of our earth chain, and I believe that is true, and yet we would think that also the sixth chain will particularly give opportunity for that sixth initiation. So we're uncertain here. Certainly the Christ and the Buddha are in a way far advanced, having taken at least part of the seventh initiation thus far. But I think there will be some in our seventh round of our particular chain who take that initiation. And yet if we look at the seventh chain, it will, I think, offer great opportunity. Now, it may be our Earth is supposed to be as highly developed as Venus. It isn't. Venus has completed its task in five rounds, and I presume that these are scheme rounds and not chain rounds. It remains to be seen whether Earth can do that, the logos of Earth, or whether in fact our full seven scheme rounds will be needed. It seems though that on every one of the chains, seven chain rounds are going to be in progress. Certainly they are in process and progress right here on our fourth chain, although we are still in our fourth chain round. Okay, now let's look a little further here. It's all such deep stuff, you know. And every sentence can be broken out into a considerable development. A considerable development. Okay. Because of its position on the fixed cross, we're back to Leo, Leo of the fiery pain. We remember what we have there. We have the blinding light of Taurus, the fiery pain of Leo, the bitter woe of Scorpio, and the liberation of Aquarius. We have to demonstrate Uranus, the planet of liberation, right on our dense systemic levels of gas, liquid, and minerality. Our understanding has to come down to that level, and our divinity, and this is monadic. Whenever he uses the word divinity, or so often, this often means monadic when he discusses that. So because of its position upon the fixed cross, Leo comes under the influence, direct or indirect, of six planets. Well, the Sun rules Leo. Neptune is the esoteric ruler, the veiled esoteric ruler of Leo. Uranus is the veiled hierarchical ruler of Leo. Jupiter is the esoteric ruler of Aquarius. Now Venus and Mars are also mentioned. Venus is the interesting that Vulcan is not mentioned here. Venus is certainly the orthodox ruler of Taurus, also on the fixed cross, and Mars is the orthodox and esoteric ruler of Mars is the esoteric ruler of Scorpio. Now, why is Vulcan not mentioned? Well, perhaps if we ultimately are to substitute something here for the Sun, it might be Vulcan. The Sun is the only luminary here mentioned. So if we go to Aquarius, we find Uranus as the ruler. It can be mentioned here because it's the ruler of Aquarius. Jupiter can be mentioned because sometimes the sun can be considered veiling Jupiter in an orthodox sense, but it is the esoteric ruler of Aquarius. Venus is the esoteric ruler of Gemini, but along with Vulcan, the two rulers of Taurus, and so forth. So this may or may not be considered a complete list. And it's so interesting that the Leo subject will come under the direct or indirect influence of six planets. Now, the ones that I think are most prominent are the first four: the Sun, Neptune, Uranus, and even Jupiter, considered to be a kind of a veiled orthodox ruler. There is a point in the book that I wonder if I can find that. I'm always looking for it, you know, but it does show itself. Maybe in the Leo chapter here, we'll have to see. All of these are potent in expression in this sign, or should we say, in relation to this sign, or for the native who is born in this sign, simply because that native is on the fixed cross. Now, you'd have to ask whether all people born on the fixed cross are not subject to these particular planets, and further, whether Vulcan would not be involved. For some reason, Vulcan is not mentioned here. But I think there may be a difference between what we call direct influence and indirect, and perhaps we might say that the direct influence is more powerful than the indirect influence, in which case the Sun is particularly potent in Leo, and also the Sun veiling Neptune and veiling Uranus are particularly potent. We'll see the extent to which Jupiter is. That has yet to be confirmed. So all of these are potent in relation to this sign, Leo, achieving a determining point of revelation. Revelation is so important with Leo. If you think about the fifth initiation corresponding with the fifth sign, Leo, it is the initiation of revelation or of illumination, a higher type of illumination, I suspect, of the purpose of our planetary logos, and maybe to an extent of the purpose of our solar logos as well. So they achieve a determining point of revelation and produce, or producing, through their united activity, the six-pointed star of humanity. There are so many of these six-pointed stars, and they have different appellations, different kinds of meanings. Some of them are very great, and some of them are between planets, and some of them are between or amongst the various constellations or signs of the zodiac. So we are told that Leo is the most human of all the signs, interestingly, and this is producing the six-pointed star of humanity, perhaps in honor of the fact, let's say, write it down, honor of the fact that Leo is the most human of all the signs. Okay. They condition the man's consciousness, but not events. And we do remember that Leo is that one of the fire signs that is associated most with consciousness. Leo is associated with consciousness. It's Aries is associated with the spirit aspect, Leo with the consciousness aspect, and Sagittarius with the body or the form aspect. So they condition the man's consciousness, but not events, except insofar as his consciousness assumes control at a certain point in his evolution and produces events and produces form. We might say that eventually... that's wrong. Eventually, consciousness produces form and also conditions the appearance of events, as when the soul stages certain events to elevate or purify the consciousness of the individual. So we are dealing with consciousness, you know, sun, consciousness of selfhood, Neptune, consciousness of ethereality and of the refined and often invisible factors in life, Uranus, the consciousness of the archetype, Jupiter, the consciousness of ever-expanding wholes, Venus, the consciousness of the soul and of the solar factor and of the solar angels, and Mars, very much the consciousness of the personality and of all the vehicles in the personality, and I suppose especially of the lunar lords that comprise the personality, as Mars is the ruler of the lunar lords. We are shown in that chart on page 35 or so of esoteric astrology. Connected with the esoteric science of astrology are subsidiary sciences. Now, you kind of wonder what is subsidiary. I do wonder, you know, whether the science of relations should not be considered the most important of all the sciences to which astrology and all others are a subsidiary. But he has different ways of looking at this. Earlier in the book, he, I think, talked about somewhere in the 60s of the book, I believe, talked about astrology and its subsidiary sciences. So connected with the esoteric science of astrology are subsidiary sciences such as the science of triangles, to which he will give a great deal of attention in the second part of the book, he says, to which I have frequently referred. There is also the science of relationship, which concerns the relations between the many quaternaries which can be discovered in the planetary interrelation, the relation between four constellations plus many human and divine quaternaries. Well, in a way, the personality is a quaternary. We consider personality is a quaternary. The four elements are ruling there. The elements themselves are quaternaries. The four signs of the same mode or guna, whether it's fixed, immutable, or cardinal, they are quaternaries. And if we look at four planets together, they will often times bring in four constellations which form a quaternary. For instance, we can look at Venus, for instance, Venus, planetary interrelation, producing a quaternary, such as Venus, bringing in Taurus, Gemini, Libra, and Capricorn. See how that works. We're talking about different levels of rulership here, but Venus brings in those four particularly. And I suppose, you know, we would also have to consider the signs in which it has its fall or detriment. But in terms of its strength of expression, Venus brings in those four, which would be considered to be a quaternary. I mean, does Mercury do something similar? Let's see. Mercury brings in Aries, Gemini, Virgo, and Scorpio, doesn't it? And so those constellations would be considered a quaternary related through the power of Mercury, or through the rulerships of Mercury. So there are many ways of bringing things into relation, and DK talks about the great science of relation, relating these various factors. But if we look at the science of relation in a still larger sense, this is a science which relates every single distinct factor in the consciousness of the universal logos to every other factor. And so I often wonder if in the larger and abstract sense, the science of relations should not be considered the paramount science, of which the science of the rays and the science of astrology and so forth are subsidiary. from that perspective. Can we say that there are other quaternaries? Well, you know, if we begin to look at the monad, we have the point within the triangle. It's a tetrahedron. It's kind of a quaternary in a way. excuse me. Pardon me. If we, let's see here. Right. Have cleared my voice now. So if we look at all of these various factors the Tibetan is pointing out, yes, then the science of relations is subsidiary because it's talking about the relations of things which are included in astrology, but the great science of astrology itself is a science which deals with all manner of interrelations. And I do think that when trying to be specific about that which is included within the contents of consciousness of the universal logos, the science of relations is the greatest of all. At least this is my perspective. In oneness, there are no relations, but in the unity, which is found among all contents of consciousness within the universal logos, then indeed there are relations. There is again the science of stars of energy, such as I have here noted when referring to the six-pointed star of humanity. And of this, King Solomon's seal is the well-known symbol. I was in Agra, India, and that was the court and headquarters of the great emperor known as Akbar, which I think means great anyway. And on his buildings, he had emblazoned the seal of Solomon, Solomon being also one of his earlier incarnations. Humanity, that kingdom which through a benevolent desire has descended from the sixth plane, desire being the sixth, the coming forth as a monad related to the number sixth on the sixth plane counting from below. Very strongly we have then the six-pointed star of humanity, and even Leo is in a sense the sixth sign counting from above downwards. If we look at this, we see here five creative hierarchies ruled by various of the constellations, Pisces, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, and then if we go to the next one, sure enough, it's Leo, and one of its numbers again is six. And there we have six related to Leo, which I think is important. So, the most human of all the signs, Leo, and the number six associated with it, and the six-pointed star of humanity, each one of those planets playing a very important role. First, in personality, nature, we could say Mars, the personality, Venus, the soul. Well, Mars, all aspects of the personality, the sun, the personality as a whole, Venus, the soul, Jupiter, the expansion of consciousness within the soul, Neptune and Uranus relating to the spiritual triad as the two highest synthesizing planets, and again Jupiter relating to the monad. So we have the story of ascent, and the monad itself can be associated with the sun. Okay. Right. 6 points of humanity. And King Solomon's seal is the well-known symbol of these six-pointed stars, and perhaps especially of the six-pointed star of humanity. But as I said, six-pointed stars are known to exist among the constellations themselves. These stars, triangles, and squares are found in all horoscopes, human, planetary, systemic, and cosmic. Imagine such horoscopes. We can barely get beyond the human in our horoscopery. But the planetary horoscope will one day be discovered by humanity, and when a certain level of understanding is reached, then horoscopes relating to the solar system itself and to the sun will be found, and eventually horoscopes relating to the cosmic logos, which our solar logos plays a part. And they constitute the life pattern of the particular being under investigation, the human being, the planetary logos, the solar logos, the cosmic logos. They determine the time of manifestation and the nature of the emanations and influences. Well, you look at our progress charts, and certain influences come into existence at certain times and make possible certain types of manifestation. Certain energies are available always because of the major horoscope of any one of these particular beings, and then other energies tell about the time for particular manifestations in terms of the cycles to be passed through by that particular type of being. Well, it's all beyond our ken here, but at least we're trying to understand something of the human horoscope, and just a little perhaps we can divine of the planetary horoscope, just a little. The stars or quaternaries relate to material appearance or, the squares or quaternaries relate to material appearance or form expression. And perhaps that's why the squares are considered to be so difficult, because they deal with the problems involved in working out various emanations and influences in within that very resistant medium we call matter, the dense aggregation, the congestion which matter is said to be. So the squares, the crosses, and so forth, these are energies which are not readily in harmony with each other, but have to be worked into a state of harmony through an act of the will. The stars concern states of consciousness. Well, we know the soul is associated with the number five, and stars are particularly connected with the number five, at least the kind of star we most frequently use. So it indicates the soul realm, and the real meaning of soul is, of course, consciousness. Of course, there are seven-pointed stars and six-pointed stars. I'm not so sure that he's referring to those particularly, although perhaps six-pointed stars could relate to the consciousness of the monad. Monad has consciousness, just as every being does, even though DK discusses the relinquishment of what we call consciousness as we begin to focus on the triadal planes, but that's consciousness as we know it. Great beings have consciousness, and the entire universal logos, the one being of all cosmos, has its own type of consciousness. So it's a generic factor. It's a factor that we cannot be rid of, though the modes of consciousness continually change and become, in a way, unfamiliar to us, especially when we have a particular limited conception of what consciousness is based upon duality. So the stars concern states of consciousness. There's an astrologer who works with heliocosms, Peter Kubaska, conjunctions of the sun and various planets, successive conjunctions, and the geometry that they create. And when he indicates a heliocosm, which gives us a sense of consciousness, he indicates it with a five-pointed star. He's the expert in that field, and you will have to consult with him upon the meaning of that within the personal horoscope and also the planetary horoscope. And the triangles are related to spirit and to synthesis. The triangles are all generically of the same element, fire, earth, air, or water, and they bring together the three aspects of that element. You know, for instance, with Aries, it's in electric fire. With Leo, it's solar fire. With Sagittarius, it's fire by friction. And so the synthesis of the three fires, or of the three aspects of any element, are found in relation to the triangles. When we're dealing with stars, we're dealing with relationships of 72 degrees between the points. If you divide the circle of 360 by 5, you get 72 degrees. If we're dealing with six-pointed stars, then the relationship is one of 60 degrees, but it's kind of a subsidiary of the 120 degrees involved in the triangles themselves. There are all kinds of relationships. Some of them come out even, and some of them are more what we call irrational. They will never come out even, such as the seven-pointed star or the septile. It will never give us an even number. DK tells us that in the archives of the esoteric astrologers connected with the hierarchy, charts are kept of those members of the human family who have achieved adeptship and upwards. So, these esoteric astrologers, they must be even beyond hierarchical status or even beyond the fifth degree. Why should that not continue beyond the fifth degree? After all, astrology is the science of all the sciences. So we don't have these kinds of charts kept for us specifically, although some variation of them may exist. But adeptship, the fifth degree, and upwards. I'm sure the planetary logos is a very expert astrologer at his own extremely high level, and so it would go for the solar logos and beyond. After all, astrology is a method of determining relationship between any unit of life and the cosmic environment. So the astrology known by the solar logos must be quite extraordinary and beyond, and so forth. Even the galactic logos will have to have his own type of astrology in relation to other galaxies and families of galaxies, entirely beyond our ken, but gives us a vista of that which may lie ahead in this apparently eternal opportunity for evolution, and yet somehow limited, after all, by time. So these charts, very interesting charts, are composed of superimposed squares, stars, and triangles, perhaps showing us the balance of manifestation, consciousness, and spiritual impulse. In our own life, we need a balance between spirit, soul, or consciousness, and matter form. And so do the greater beings. So they are composed of superimposed squares, stars and triangles, contained within the zodiacal wheel and mounted upon the symbol of the cardinal cross. We've seen the symbol of the cardinal cross, I think. Maybe I can dig that up for us relatively quickly, perhaps. Let's see. Cardinal. That's not quite an R there. Cardinal. Cardinal cross symbol. There it is. So here we go. What does he tell us? All this will be mounted on the symbol of the cardinal cross. Later we will take this up. It has a very ramifying effect, but notice how the triangle is involved in the cardinal cross and ramifications of triangles. Since the cardinal cross has to do with spirit, it is fitting that the triangle be involved, according to what DK has just said, that triangles represent the spirit. So upon the symbol of the cardinal cross, which we have just looked at, a triangle leading out to other possible connections, many of them, and somehow sustained by a vertical shaft. The meaning of that we will have to explore together when we reach that point of the book. God willing, we will reach that point of the book together. Okay, so the squares, having each of their four angles and points in one or another of four zodiacal constellations, are depicted in black. And interestingly enough, we're dealing with the three aspects of divinity here, and the squares are particularly related to the third aspect of divinity. The colors of the third aspect of divinity are green, yes, the third ray, but also black. And black is one of the colors of Saturn, the black that befalls consciousness when it is extremely limited in matter. The five-pointed star, and here he seems to specify that it's not a six-pointed star, is depicted yellow or golden color. It's the yellow of consciousness. It's the yellow or gold of the egoic lotus. It represents the illumination of the sun. Our sun is yellow or golden in color. I mean, there may be other types of illumination because there are suns of many colors, even purple, green, you know, but maybe there are illuminations along those lines. But when we think of illumination, we generally think of yellow or golden because the sun, the symbol of illumination for us, is yellow or golden, it being the type of sun that it is of the fourth order, and yellow being connected with the fourth ray. So the five-pointed star is depicted in yellow or golden color. And its 5 points are in contact with five of the constellations on the great wheel. He doesn't tell us which five. But it wouldn't have to tell us which particular five. It would depend on how the star is oriented, where its apex is, since there's always 72 degrees between the points. Every point will necessarily be in another constellation. We could give an example, for instance, that like if we start with the apex in Aries, one way of looking at this is that the Gemini will be involved. Well, let's see, 72 degrees. No, it will have to be from Aries to Gemini. And then moving backwards, Aries Pisces, and Aries, the last degree of Pisces, the last degree of Aquarius, and going backwards into Aquarius, I suppose. Aquarius. And then if we are to look further, another 144 degrees, well, 120 degrees would take us into Leo. So Leo will be another one of those constellations. And if we go backwards 120 degrees, we come to, is it, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, Sagittarius. So 120 plus 24 is Leo, and 120 backwards, plus another 24 will take us into Scorpio, won't it? And now I better take a look at that. I better take a look at that Aquarius. If we go back, let's say 60 degrees, we reach the beginning of Aquarius, don't we? So from the beginning of Aquarius to the beginning of Aries, well, it depends on where we are in Aries, but let's say we put the apex at 0 degrees of Aries. That would be one thing to do. Then it wouldn't be Aquarius after all, would it? It would be Capricorn. So that would be a five-pointed star, and they would continue. I wonder, you know, putting the five-pointed star, the apex of it, perhaps in the sign which ruled the soul. Now, every soul comes into incarnation at a certain point in the history of our planet and therefore carries its own sign. So maybe the apex of the five-pointed star is always in that sign. Or from another perspective, if the rising sign is very soul-related, then one can place the five-pointed star at the first point of the rising sign and then go 72 degrees forward, 72 degrees backward, 144 degrees forward, 144 degrees backward. So yes, it's not Aquarius after all, it's Capricorn. And each one of these could be studied in terms of the consciousness of the individual. You get the idea of how it can be done, right? You get the idea of how it can be done. And yeah, interesting. I mean, we could work that out for each, the beginning of each sign. I mean, you know, if you think about it, maybe it would have to be in this way. If you went to Taurus, beginning of Taurus, then the sign would have to be Cancer. And then moving backwards, it would have to be Aquarius. And then moving forward, instead of Leo, it would have to be Virgo. And then moving forward instead of Scorpio, it would have to be Sagittarius. So there are different ways of doing this, and but you could work that out for yourself as needed. Since we still don't know how we would use these five-pointed stars, it doesn't pay to create them all. But so much depends upon the particular place in the sign where the apex would be found. So, you know, you get a completely different result, I suspect, if you put the apex at 1 degree of Aries compared with 28 degrees of Aries. Then already you would have moved forward into Cancer instead of Gemini. You see what I mean? Anyway, perhaps the astrologers in these high, very high departments can work these things out. The triangles are in blue because they represent the monad, after all, don't they? And the color of the monadic plane, if it's associated with Jupiter, which it is, can be considered to be blue. Now, there are different ways of working out colors in relation to the subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. You know, we can, for instance, we can, if we wished, say, well, for the solar logos, this Buddhic level is kind of purple. Then this would be, because it would be as if it's a physical plane, then this would be the astral, and then this would be the mental, be considered orange, and then the divine plane would be considered yellow. But the monadic plane, connected with Vishnu and with the second ray and with Jupiter, has a good reason for being considered blue, and we live in the life of the blue logos. The second ray is blue. It's a second ray solar system, and this is ultimately a second ray planet, at least from its sole perspective. So blue is appropriate somehow for the triangles. And above each point of the triangle, an esoteric symbol standing for the constellations of the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades, which respectively stand for three aspects of divinity, So I suppose it depends on the monadic ray of the individual how this triangle is oriented, because ultimately the highest type of monadic ray, I think there are two types really, will be one of the three aspects of divinity, and so the first ray monad will be oriented towards the Great Bear, the second ray monad towards Sirius, or perhaps towards the Little Bear, for which Sirius may be a blind, or Sirius can be a blind for Orion as well, as some astrologers have speculated, carrying the second ray in the ultimate monadic sense, and the Pleiades, the third ray. So I suppose much depends on the orientation of that triangle and on the monadic ray. I think it's time to say, okay, look, we have done part A, let's say. So this is esoteric astrology adventure number 92A, part page, what is the page? Oh, my. Should be page 305. Haven't made a whole lot of progress here, but it's been a number of months, so I'm just getting used to the process again, and this is the end of that, and then we will be ready to go on to the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure. Part number 92, part B. Okay, so EAA 92, B, and page 305. And this will be the beginning.